Well, when Republicans do present the president's case in the Senate trial, Alan Dershowitz, professor emeritus at Harvard Law, will be arguing on his behalf. You probably know he said he'll argue that abuse of power and obstruction of Congress are not impeachable offenses because there's no crime, no law broken. But as we've pointed out, Alexander Hamilton said in the Federalist Papers, all you need is violation of the public trust. Let's go deeper with Stephen Vladeck, law professor at the University of Texas, Austin. Professor, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And we want to touch in on these legal questions as we go along in this trial. You know Dershowitz's view, contrary, by the way, to statements he made in 1998 when he said there certainly doesn't have to be a crime for impeachment. He's now said he has a more sophisticated argument, and he's basing it on the defense of President Andrew Johnson. In his impeachment trial in the 1800s, Johnson impeached for removing a Secretary of War. There's also concern he wasn't going to carry out Reconstruction after the Civil War, but the argument from his lawyer was, but there's no law broken, and he was cleared. So why doesn't it follow, as Dershowitz says, that, see, that was used as a defense?
So first, I mean, I think we should clarify the record. I mean, Johnson was cleared in the sense that one senator voted the other way. Had it gone one senator differently, Johnson would have been removed. But, you know, if we look at the broader history of impeachment, and it's not just Alexander Hamilton, it's, you know, impeachment of other federal officials besides presidents. It's the proposed articles of impeachment against President Nixon. It just has been understood always that there are examples of gross misconduct, what the founders called maladministration, that would be impeachable whether or not they were a technical violation of the criminal code. Otherwise, we're setting up a scenario where basically the ability to remove a president for not acting in America's best interests depends upon what Congress has chosen to criminalize. It's not how the founders understood impeachment. It's not how the Andrew Johnson and Richard Nixon impeachment discussions went. And I think it would set a bad precedent for presidents going forward.
Well, and we should add, when we look back at the Johnson case, as you say, it was just one vote, but also Republican senators were worried about who would have succeeded him. He was a radical Republican. He was disliked by more conservative Republicans, so that factored into that vote. And as you were alluding to, there wasn't a federal criminal code when the founders drew up the Constitution.
That's right. And so I think, you know, the key here is that we should all agree that presidents should not be subject to impeachment solely for political differences. One of the first impeachments in American history, the impeachment of Supreme Court Justice Samuel Chase, failed largely because the Senate said these are just political differences. These are not allegations of the type of misconduct that should result in removal from office. But we should all be comfortable with the idea that if a president, for example, refused to order the army to defend the country from an imminent attack or took other steps to basically put his interests ahead of the country, it really doesn't matter whether those are criminal, especially in a world in which, you know, the government takes the position that a sitting president can't be indicted. The real question is, does a majority of the House and two-thirds of the Senate honestly believe that the president is acting in violation of his oath, that the president is acting in derogation of the country's best interests? And if the answer is yes, I think getting caught up on the formality of what Congress has chosen to proscribe misses the forest for a pretty specific and distracting tree.
And one more historical note, because I love this one. We're reading in the Associated Press, which dug into this history, that behind the scenes, he also promised senators that he'd stop impeding Reconstruction. And some historians believe that the senator who cast the deciding vote was bribed.
Vice President Pence wrote an op-ed last week about how Senator Ross, the senator whose vote was the swing vote in the Senate, how he was a profile in courage. Well, this is the exact example that we should be trying to break, because Ross was not only bribed for his vote, but he was offered tons of federal patronage in exchange for voting not to remove President Johnson. It is the exact example we should be trying to break from in this moment in American history.
Real quick, the president said yesterday he'd like to see Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and others, including former National Security Advisor John Bolton, testify, but there's a national security risk. What's the scholarly view of that?
Well, I mean, first, it's worth stressing, you know, the notion that there's a national security risk in things that have been said publicly, stated publicly, I think is a little bit tough to swallow. But ultimately, you know, the trial rules come down to the Senate. Even if the Senate agrees to call someone like John Bolton, you know, Bolton could assert executive privilege. We should all understand, though, that executive privilege is not a right to not testify. Executive privilege doesn't cover things like what conversations did he have with people other than the president. So the notion that, you know, this privilege could block this testimony, I think is a convenient cover for those who don't want these folks to testify at all.
Stephen Vladeck, law professor at the University of Texas, Austin. Professor, thank you.
Thank you.